From the Missouri School of Journalism and KBIA, welcome to Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. The Philippines is in the midst of a spectacularly brutal war on drugs. The man behind it is the new president, Rodrigo Duterte, who took office June 30th. In Duterte's first 7 weeks on the job, more than 1,800 people were killed by police or vigilante death squads. By one estimate, that figure has climbed to nearly 4,000 through mid-October. Now, those being killed aren't just suspected drug traffickers. They're also ordinary drug users, street children, and sometimes people who are just in the wrong place at the wrong time. The Philippines, it does have a significant problem with methamphetamines, and the government's anti-narcotics agency estimates there are 1.3 million drug users in a country of about 100 million. Duterte's violent crackdown does have popular support. One recent poll put his approval rating at 86%. The government says 600,000 drug criminals have turned themselves in to police. But a growing chorus of critics that includes rights groups, the UN, and the Obama administration argue that Duterte's efforts to instill order are both immoral and undermine the rule of law. In a few minutes, we'll hear some different views on the bloodshed in the Philippines from a great panel of experts. But first, we're going to talk to someone on the ground who follows President Duterte closely. Joining us from the capital, Manila, is John Paolo Bencito, a reporter for the Manila Standard. John Paolo, welcome to Global Journalist.
Good evening here from Manila, and it's nice to be here.
Well, John Paolo, the number of people killed in just 100 days of President Duterte's term is just staggering. What's the reaction from people in the Philippines to this?
So basically, there's a divided growing number of concern on the president's campaign against illegal drugs. To be honest, people here are some kind of support. The people here are supportive of Mr. Duterte's campaign against or his war on illegal drugs. However, many of his critics are concerned about the growing number of extrajudicial killings allegedly being perpetrated by state forces here in the country. A recent report by the Philippine National Police here in the country estimates that since the administration took office, Mr. Duterte, or rather the police, has estimated 3,000 deaths since the start of this administration. Mr. Duterte has repeatedly stressed that his administration is not behind the number of killings here in the country. However, it's still to be known in the coming days whether these insinuations of having the drug war being perpetrated by police forces are true.
Okay, and so has he sort of formally, overtly endorsed the idea that police should be shooting people?
Based on the president's speeches, he repeatedly stressed that if the police are being threatened by criminals, they have a right to shoot or kill these criminal suspects. Moreover, Mr. Duterte stressed that he will protect all the police, the military, who will be taking his orders seriously just to eradicate the drug problem here in our country. Mr. Duterte has been accused of perpetrating the drug killings here in the country. But moreover, he has a history of being the former mayor of Davao City. It's a southern city here in the Philippines. Many of the extrajudicial deaths linked to drug killings were being attributed to him by what he claims political rivals here in the country.
Well, I understand that when he was mayor of Davao, he was known as the Death Squad mayor. And we're going to talk a little bit more about this, because what is his relationship with these vigilante groups or death squads that are apparently carrying out some of these killings in addition to the police?
Okay, just to give a little background, Davao City is one of major southern cities here in the country. It's located in the island of Mindanao. Now, since the influx, like most cities in the Philippines, there is an influx of illegal drugs here in the country. Mr. Duterte, since he took office as mayor, he has launched a war in his own city on the proliferation of narcotics in his city, and basically threatened all criminals in his city that he will be killing them, like this, like that. However, various investigations, including the Human Rights Watch, has made pronouncements that Mr. Duterte's war on drugs in his own city has produced some number of still to be identified as extrajudicial killings, if that is the case. Just recently, in a Senate hearing here in the country, a self-confessed hitman accused the then mayor of Davao City of allegedly condoning and perpetrating the drug killings. However, Mr. Duterte has repeatedly stressed that he's not behind the so-called Davao Death Squads in his city, and he is basically linking them to infightings between drug criminal groups themselves.
Well, let me ask you this. We talked in the introduction about his high approval ratings. Given the scale of violence in the Philippines, how is he such a popular figure?
During the campaign, as we followed him throughout the campaign, he's basically stressing out on his war on drugs, ending corruption. However, Mr. Duterte is basically a firebrand leader, is an interesting figure. He's not the usual kind of person like the Manila elite, the politicians for the Manila elite that basically sells themselves off being a good, clean politician. Mr. Duterte basically represents the so-called neglect of the Manila to the other regions. Mr. Duterte being a Mindanaoan, Mindanao is one of the three island groups in the Philippines. He's basically stressing that the provinces that are most neglected by Manila should be developed. And Mr. Duterte throughout the campaign rose from a staggered number to a high approval rating later in the campaign that won him the presidency. Mr. Duterte's high approval ratings can be linked to his being natural and being the truthful politician that most Filipinos don't see in their local politicals in the area.
Well, John Paolo Bencito, thanks so much for joining us.
Okay, thank you.
A reminder that you're listening to Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. We're talking today about the extremely violent crackdown on drugs in the Philippines launched by the country's new president, Rodrigo Duterte, whose nickname is The Punisher. To learn more, we're going to bring in three people who have been following the violence closely. Joining us from New York is Phelim Kain. He's the deputy director of the Asia Division at Human Rights Watch. In Manila is Jail Serrano Cornelio, a sociologist and director of development studies at Ateneo de Manila University. And in Washington, D.C. is Sanho Tri, director of the Drug Policy Project at the Institute for Policy Studies. Phelim Kain, let me go to you first. Human Rights Watch was investigating Duterte back when he was the mayor of this southern city of Davao, and even then he was known as the Death Squad mayor. Give us just an overview of what your research about his anti-narcotics efforts have shown. Is this what's happening now? Is it just a reiteration of what he did as mayor?
Well, I think that, I think that from the outset, we need to really make clear that President Duterte is an individual with blood on his hands. He was mayor of Davao City for 22 years. During that period, Human Rights Watch documented the existence of a vicious death squad that killed hundreds of people, quote unquote, undesirables, including street children as young as 14 years of age. Now, there's never been any concrete evidence linking now President Duterte to the Davao Death Squad, but elements of his municipal government and his police force organized, paid, and dispatched this death squad. And President Duterte, then Mayor Duterte, was an enthusiastic supporter of death squads as a form of quote unquote crime control. And as mayor, Duterte would go on local radio and read names of what he said were suspected criminals. And guess what? More often than not, the names that he read, those people would end up dead at the hands of unidentified gunmen. So what we have is an extension of that model of quote-unquote crime control, which is essentially mass extrajudicial violence, which has been applied nationally. And so we now have a body count that even the Philippines police say is more than 2,000 people. And President Duterte and senior members of his government, instead of recognizing this as an appalling national emergency, they are applauding this bloodletting on the streets of Philippine cities, calling it a success and calling for more deaths. This is absolutely appalling.
Well, Sanho Tri, let me turn this to you then. What do we know about this drug problem in the Philippines? How much worse is it than that in other countries in Asia?
It's not that much worse, but not to make light of the problem. But you have other countries in the region, like Thailand, for instance, that undertook a very similar approach, a very bloody all-out war in 2003. Over 2,800 people were killed in that war. And now the Thai government is actually thinking of decriminalizing methamphetamines because if you treat it like other drugs and reduce the sanctions, that allows people to get help and to seek health services rather than driving a problem further underground. But at the end of the day, we're talking about minimally processed agricultural and chemical commodities that should cost pennies per dose to produce. All right. So when we talk about drugs around the world, we're talking about very cheap commodities that aren't difficult to make. The reason they're worth so much money is because of drug prohibition and the risks to drug traffickers. So we create a drug, a price support, if you will, an indirect risk premium for drug traffickers. And so it makes drugs more valuable, thus luring more people into this trade. So it amplifies the motivational feedback loop of the people we're trying to stop.
Well, let me ask you this then. You said earlier that the drug problem in the Philippines wasn't that much worse than that in other Asian countries. So why has the response in the Philippines been so violent?
You know, again, not to make light of the situation, but if you go back to The Simpsons, there's an episode with Neely Simpsons when young Bart runs for class president. And he begins by attacking his opponent with a speech. He says, "My opponent says there are no easy answers, but I say he's not looking hard enough." That is the problem with politics today. In the Philippines, in Washington, it's why Fox News is so popular. It's why the global Trumpian tantrum is rocking the world right now, that voters want easy answers. They want leaders who sound like them, who use language, who talk like them. But governance is difficult. And some of the most intractable problems facing our societies today have solutions that are counterintuitive. That is to say, the obvious knee-jerk solution is usually the wrong one. And nowhere is that more true than the case of drugs.
Well, let me turn this to Jail Cornelio then, because the Philippines, it is a fairly devout Roman Catholic country, but that hasn't stopped Duterte from lashing out publicly at Pope Francis, at bishops in the country. What has the church's position been on this issue?
Very good question. Jason, I'm not sure how clear my signal is, but let me just answer your question.
Yeah, we hear you fine.
Okay, perfect. The Catholic Church here, as I'm trying to analyze the situation here, I get the sense that the response has been generally fragmented. There are bishops and priests who are vocal about their support of the president, but at the same time, you also get some bishops who are vocal about their opinion against what they see as extrajudicial killing or the unnecessary killings that the police seems to be involved in the country. I think, generally speaking, in as much as there are these fragmentations, I think the Catholic Church is in a wait-and-see attitude right now because it is very difficult for the institution to critique the administration point blank, simply because, as John Paolo mentioned, generally the public is very satisfied with this current administration. In fact, if I may say this, according to a very recent survey, 84% of Filipinos are satisfied with the government's crackdown on illegal drugs. That is very, very telling.
Well, Philim Kind, give us just a couple stories of some of the victims of this campaign that your group has documented.
Well, I think I just want to back up a bit and just talk about a couple of issues. First off, you know, when we refer to what President Duterte and his government are perpetrating in the Philippines as a war on drugs, it's an absolute insult to the victims and it's a disservice to the facts. And I say that because the vast majority of those people who are being targeted, and more than 2,000 people by either police or unidentified gunmen, are some of the poorest, most marginalized, most vulnerable people in the Philippines. It's much more accurate, and the United Nations Human Rights High Commissioner has said the same thing. It's much more accurate to describe this campaign as a war against the poor. So what President Duterte has done is essentially create this sense that there is a quote-unquote drug emergency in the Philippines and run with it, and given himself license and given his police license to kill for a reason that has real no real factual basis in terms of what the drug situation really is in the Philippines, which, and you look at the statistics, as your other guest pointed out rightly, you know, it's not that different from the drug situation in the United Kingdom or in Australia. The other issue I want to talk about is this idea of President Duterte's quote-unquote popularity. I think we need to remember President Duterte was elected on a plurality. He had 38% of the popular vote. That means that 62% of the people who went to the polls in May voted for someone else. Now, there's no doubt that he has very enthusiastic supporters within the electorate that voted him in. But the reason that you don't see a lot of overt opposition to what's going on in the Philippines is that there really is this state of fear, because what's happened is that those individuals who have stood up publicly to challenge this campaign of lawless bloodletting have been targeted, vilified, and completely threatened by Duterte and his government. And specifically, I'm talking about the very brave Senator Leyla de Lima, who essentially has called for and organized Senate hearings into these killings, and as a result has been politically crucified by the Duterte government. And so I think it's really important to consider that opposition to this horrible campaign is masked because people are simply afraid to speak out.
Well, Jail Cornelio, you're in Manila now. What is the climate like for people, for human rights activists, for journalists, for opponents who stand up and say what's happening is wrong? How is it is it that difficult for them?
Oh, to be honest, they're a lone voice in the wilderness. Human rights activists in the country used to be heroes of the nation, especially during the martial law period under Ferdinand Marcos. Now, the rhetoric of the president has been lodged against human rights activists. In fact, during his State of the Nation address, he argued that some people are using human rights to destroy the country. I think he said it like that. But I must if I could just respond very briefly to what Philim said just now about the climate of fear in the country. I must qualify that. As a sociologist, I rely on surveys done, and to be honest, 84%, as I said, are very satisfied with the war on illegal drugs. I think less than 5% are dissatisfied or disagree with his efforts. But having said that, it is very telling that about 71% of Filipinos think that it is very important that for them that suspects are caught alive.
Well, there's two ways of looking at that, though. I mean, if 71% are saying it's important suspects are caught alive, that implies that 29% or some significant number of people think it's okay they're not being caught alive.
Or undecided at the very least. I think more than anything else, there is this general appreciation of what the president is doing. I'm not necessarily supportive of the president. I'm just giving as objective an analysis as possible. Because President Duterte presents himself as a man of action. And if this is what needs to be done to eradicate illegal drugs, drug abuse, and criminality in the country, then it will be done. And this is very important also because for Filipinos in January this year, the second most important national concern is fighting illegal drugs. It was, of course, created by the rhetoric of the president when he campaigned in December, and it showed up in the surveys in January. So in many ways, yes, it is a created enemy, but it is an enemy that matters to many people anyway.
And Senho Tri, let me turn that to you then. We heard Jail talking about some of the popularity of Duterte as expressed in some of these surveys, as well as some concerns by the Filipino population. Are there some underlying issues in the Philippines that this focus on drugs or on really killing people may be overshadowing.
Absolutely. I think the real problems in most societies that are grappling with a serious drugs problem are rooted in problems of poverty, despair, and alienation. If you focus on those underlying problems, you solve a whole host of other social issues. There is no way to kill, to murder your way into a healthy society. If you go back to the Old Testament, the term scapegoat literally referred to a goat in Leviticus, right, where the high priest would confess the sins of the village onto a goat and drive the goat out of the village, thereby cleansing the village. Drugs are a very useful political scapegoat. So you take a whole host of social issues that are ignored and people are fed up with, and you scapegoat one group and say, aha, if we just got rid of this one group and drove them out of society or killed them, it would be wine and roses. And this is looking like a very much like a classical pogrom. It is scapegoating a society's ills on a particular group of people when a lot of people want issues of inflation, unemployment, public health. These are other issues that people are also very passionate about.
I want to remind our listeners that this is Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. We're talking today about the use of death squads in the Philippines in an effort to rid the country of drug use and what that may mean for the Southeast Asian nation's future. Our guests now are Philem Kine, the Deputy Director of the Asia Division at Human Rights Watch, Jail Serrano Cornelio, Director of Development Studies at Ateneo de Manila University in the Philippines, and Senho Tri of the Drug Policy Project at the Institute for Policy Studies. There's more on this and other undercovered international news stories on our website, globaljournalist.org. You can subscribe to our free podcast on iTunes or connect with us on YouTube and Facebook. You can also follow us on Twitter at Global Journ. Philem Kine, if I could turn this back to you then, who exactly are these people who are carrying out some of these killings? We talk about death squads. Are these police officers who take their uniforms off after work and go out and kill people? Are they hired assassins? What do we know about this?
Well, let's go with what we know for sure. We know that according to the Philippines National Police's own statistics, since July 1st to September 30th, police have killed an estimated 1,323 suspected what they call drug pushers and users. Now, 1,300 plus people in just over 3 months. Now, in the first 6 months of this year, Philippines National Police killed a total of 68 people. So we are seeing a 20-fold increase in killings by police of these suspected drug users. And the police are defending and justifying those killings by saying that every single one of those 1,323 people fought back, that they resisted arrest. And the government and the police are refusing to launch any type of investigation into how there has been such a alarming surge in killings by the police. So that's the first thing. So here we have the elements of the state, the national police killing a huge amount of people, admitting it and saying, oh, they fought back and these were bad people and we killed them. The other thing is we have another, you know, more than 1,000 killings by these quote unquote unidentified gunmen. Now, we don't know who they are, but we do know is that there is an established pattern, a modus operandi for death squads that began in Davao City under the mayorship of President Duterte, and which is that using police or people employed by the police to target quote unquote undesirables in return for financial benefit. And our concern is that what we're seeing in terms of these killings by unidentified gunmen is that they very well might be death squads that might be organized, directed by the police and or local government. And here's the problem. This steamrolls, trashes the concept of rule of law. It totally trashes fundamental rights and of suspects. And it also lets this genie out of the bottle that once you allow people, anyone with a gun and a grudge, to kill someone and know that they are not going to be face any accountability if they call that person a drug personality, this is a recipe for absolute public insecurity, lawlessness, and more deaths in the Philippines going forward.
And Jail Cornelio, this issue has attracted a substantial amount of international attention. And over the past few years, the Philippines has enjoyed fairly rapid economic growth. It's had a lot of foreign investment from the U.S., from Europe and China. Are some of those economic gains at risk from this?
Oh, very good question. There is this impression that this will affect, in the long run, the reputation of the Philippines to the international business community. The government has argued that establishing security, restoring order in the country is going to improve our business climate. But it seems that many businesses are increasingly apprehensive about staying in the Philippines right now. So ultimately, we have yet to see the impact of these crackdown on illegal drugs, but perhaps this is not the issue for President Duterte. Increasingly, he has been vocal against the United States, for example, or the United Nations. He says that he's much more willing to partner, say, with China or with Russia. And these two countries have, in fact, pledged their support to the country. So I guess as far as the president is concerned, he's not really worried about the international business community because he thinks that there are other countries like China and Russia who will accommodate the country eventually.
And Sanho Tree, our time does grow short. If I could get you to look in your crystal ball, where do you see this going in the next couple of years? How does this all end?
I think it's going to end very badly, quite frankly. You can drive the water. It's like you can suppress the violence. You can suppress the drug trade temporarily. But it's like right before a tsunami, the water goes out to the sea. It looks very calm. It's when the water comes back, you get all the violence and the damage. When you disrupt all these turf lines of the various drug groups, when they come back, when the pressure is released, they're going to have to refight and relitigate, if you will, those turf lines. That's where the real violence comes from in the drug economy. They can't go to a judge and say, Your Honor, I've been dealing drugs in this neighborhood for 20 years, and this upstart took over my turf. Please kick them out. The only way they can do that is through violence or threats of extreme violence. So it's the backlash that's really going to be the danger, I think.
And Philim, with just about 30 seconds left, last word to you. What do you see happening going forward?
Well, President Duterte is doubling down. He is dismissing criticism of this murderous policy, and he has insisted that he's going to continue. And that means we can expect double-digit killings on the streets of Philippine cities coming ahead, and maybe a death toll of up to 6,000 people by the end of the year. It's a human rights calamity encouraged, organized, and perpetrated by the government.
That's going to do it for this edition of Global Journalist, a production of the Missouri School of Journalism and KBIA Mid-Missouri Public Radio. Many thanks to John Paolo Bencito, Jael Cornelio, Sanho Tree, and Philim Kain. Our assistant producers this week are Anna Suter, Federico Maccioni, Tomas Orihuela, and Jonah McCown. Our producer is Vera Tan. Pat Akers of KBIA is our audio engineer. For all of us at Global Journalist, I'm Jason McClure. Thanks for tuning in.